This week on F8, The Photographer's Perspective, we have a special episode live from the Out of Oregon Conference 2019. I talk with Ian Plant, Blake Rudis, Ryan Smith, and Michael Shanebloom about making landscape photography profitable. I've been fortunate to work alongside some of the world's most inspiring photographers. I've watched how they've helped others at our conferences and transform the way they see through the lens. Welcome, I'm your host, Chris Smith, founder of Out of Chicago. This is F8, The Photographer's Perspective, the show where we have candid conversations and go in-depth with the pros to get to know them better. Join us each week as we discuss photography, get to know their personal perspectives, and introduce you to new places and experiences, helping you get the most out of your creative passion. So hello, this is going out to the internet at some point, and it will be part of our podcast, and it's part of our Out of Oregon Conference. We're on day three of the Oregon Out of Oregon Conference, and last night we talked about photography, ethics, and the environment, and tonight we're talking about making landscape photography profitable. And did I say? I'm Chris Smith. I'm the founder of Out of Chicago, and I am joined by Ian Plant. Wow. Ryan Smith, Blake Rudis, and special guest, because it was a surprise and we didn't know if he was really coming or not, Michael Shanebloom. So we're going to talk. These are four professional photographers that are making a living in photography. We're going to talk about possibly making a living or just making photography somewhat of a side hustle as far as your landscape photography. So before we begin, I want to do a quick background from these guys, and could you just tell us, you know, kind of where you got your start, just real quick, and tell us how you make your money. Like, just, you don't have to go into super detail, but, you know, 50% of it is from selling prints, 50% is whatever it may be, and we're going to start with Ian Plant down at the end.
All right, thank you. And I just wanted to say thank you to the studio audience here. We've got probably about 200 people out there. So let's have a round of applause from the studio audience. Thank you for showing up. Woo! Make it loud. And I also want to thank Chris Smith, for making this event possible. I've told you that you look and sound just like Seth MacFarlane. You're great on Family Guy. So keep it going. The Orville, almost there. So so I've been a professional photographer for about 15 years now, and I would say that the vast majority of my income comes from educational products and services, which I think is probably true for most folks making money from landscape photography today. So by that, I mean workshops, though I don't do really that many of those. Most of my money these days comes from doing educational videos and ebooks.
We'll go down the line here. So Ryan Smith.
Yeah, thanks for letting us be here, Chris. Appreciate
it.
Out of Chicago and great group. Thanks for coming tonight. So I'm Ryan Smith from Utah. And as far as photography, I jumped in about 6 years ago and became a resident gallery artist with my photography in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And that was the opening of the door for photo workshops, because people would go into the gallery and request to go out with the photographer of the general area. So that's, you know, how I fell into that. So as far as income from photography, I would say it's about a 70% dynamic as far as print sales, gallery, and art shows. And then the remaining comes from workshops, photography workshops. So happy to be here.
Thank you. Blake?
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for having me. So I started my venture probably 2009-ish, shooting for about 20 years, but really going hardcore in the professional world about 10 years ago. So I started with the blog just as a way to kind of get my voice and my ideas out there about the places that I've visited and been to with my camera, that eventually turned into ebooks and YouTube videos and courses, subscription websites, and basically just course material and product services for people who are aspiring landscape photographers, and basically I'd say Photoshop in general, because I really do teach a lot to the Photoshop demographic. So 99.2% of my income comes from that. It's really just course material and building educational material for landscape photographers that want to learn Photoshop.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
Of course.
Kind of a surprise. My name is Michael Shanebloom. I've been professional about 13 years, but not really into landscape as a profession until about 2013 or 14. But yeah, I would say my percentage is 70% commission projects and licensing, and then the rest is split between education and ambassadorship and stuff like that. So a little bit different, but yeah.
All right, good. How about this for a different question? What was like the very first thing you made money on that had to do with photography? Blake, you remember?
Oh boy. I just talked about it today in my finding you and your work. I put my name out on Craigslist and said, I'll do anything for money for photography.
For photography.
And my first venture was like $150 for a winter ball. And I thought it would just be like a girl and her boyfriend, but it was a girl and her boyfriend and 13 of her female friend guests with their boyfriends that I had to photograph as if they were going to prom at a winter ball in San Jose, California. And needless to say, I never did another portrait shoot ever again.
Ryan Smith?
For me, I actually went to Jackson Hole with my handy-dandy cell phone. I was wondering what the heck people were doing with these old-school cameras and tripods. I kind of laughed at them. And I took some photographs with my cell phone, posted them online, and all of a sudden got a few high school friends that were really encouraging, said, wow, amazing rule of thirds usage. And, you know, and I said, what? What are you talking about? And so I emailed her, and then all of the sudden, some people wanted some prints of my cell phone images. And so I went to print a canvas and printed one for my dad too. And that's when I realized, oh, I can't really sell this. I need a big boy camera. And so print sales right out of the gate is what started this all.
Michael, what about you?
Oh, first job. I think I was 16 and I got like $20 to shoot a friend's concert. And it was awesome. It was the best.
That's good.
It was great.
Ian?
Well, so my first sale was so long ago, I can barely remember it. I'm sure that probably it was to a magazine or something like that back in the day. But the first real income I made as a professional photographer was... I started off, you know, I've probably had more photo businesses than everyone at the table here combined. And the first photo business that I ran or co-ran with some other photographers was a self-publishing business. And I mean self-publishing in the very literal sense. This was back in the day when people actually still published books, physical books, not ebooks, but real books that you could carry around printed on paper. And we self-published coffee table books featuring photos from all sorts of places. And so I think the first little coffee table book that I self-published was on Shenandoah National Park in Virginia. So that was the first time I was really making any real money as a professional photographer.
So then you guys have gone way, way beyond that. Like, at what point did you realize, like, whoa, this is really working? Like, this could be more than just something I'm doing for fun and a little bit of extra money. Who wants to go first?
I don't think any of us have reached that point yet. So,
but some people have, left other jobs or whatever. At what point did you realize, you know, this might work?
Once we sold our camera gear, you know, it's a lot of money.
The fastest way to make money in photography.
You know,
for
me, I was always fascinated with art shows, and I had a lot of people tell me, oh, don't do that. You'll just lose your shorts. Don't go into a home show. It's so expensive. I felt like it was just something that I wanted to do. I had sold some, you know, decent sized prints in the galleries, and that was pretty steady. But I wanted to really see what I could do. And rather than opening up a gallery, I jumped into the art shows. In my first art show, I said, I am definitely going to want to have no excuses at the end of the day. I don't want to walk away from this and say, had I shown different pieces, had I had a better display, had I had better lighting, had I had some music in the booth. So I thought of everything I needed to do to just make it the best possible event. That way I could determine if it was going to be feasible. So I dumped about, you know, $10,000, $12,000 just into the booth alone. And it was a big risk. And I walked away from that show, not only selling additional prints to pay for everything, but I made a profit even considering that I dumped $12,000 investment into the booth alone. So that's when I thought, wow, 3 days worth of that, you know, gives a significant ability to drive a lot of sales and income from it from a profitability standpoint.
Ian, how about you?
When I got into the business, it was the end of the film era and the very beginning of the digital era. So I remember when I got in, photography friend of mine, one of the old film dinosaurs, told me that there was a 7-year path to profitability if you wanted to become a professional landscape photographer. And so I was thinking, wow, you know, 7 years living off of my credit card, that's going to be really rough. And, you know, at the time, I think that was actually pretty accurate because it takes a while to build up the business. I think for most folks hopping into the business in the past 10 years, that whole path to profitability has changed considerably. But back then, I think it was pretty accurate. So I, you know, year by year, I could see that the red was getting smaller and smaller, and I was getting closer and closer to the black. So I knew that eventually if I just stuck with it, it would, turn around. And, sure enough, about 6 or 7 years in was when I first started actually making a real profit. And, I think it's, you know, it's important when we talk about the business of photography, you know, nature photography in particular, is that you can make a lot of revenue, but there's a considerable investment, with equipment and also with getting to locations, especially if you're traveling around the world and going to exotic locations. So you can find yourself very quickly spending all of the money that you're making and then some. So you feel like you're doing pretty well. You feel like you're bringing in a lot of cash, but then you look at the balance sheet at the end of the year and you realize you've spent just so much more than you were bringing in. And so it's always a challenge in this business to make sure that you're not spending too much. I think with, you know, most businesses, cost containment is a really important thing, but is, you know, as a professional landscape, travel, nature photographer, cost containment actually gets in the way of enhancing your portfolio of photos and your ability to build a reputation for making those sorts of photos. So I'm always struggling myself with, you know, revenue coming in versus costs going out. For example, I just did a trip to Greenland in August, and I probably spent about $10,000 on that trip. And I'm pretty sure that I'm not going to make $10,000 directly from the photos I've made on that trip. Maybe over time, I'll find a way to make a profit off of them. So that's always a considerable challenge. And I think it was probably about 7 years into being a professional photographer that I finally got that balance under control and started actually making real profit as opposed to making money and then spending it all.
Blake, how about you? At what point did you realize, hey, this is working?
When I got here. No, for me, it was, can I mention brands here or like other companies? Okay, so I was doing a webinar for Topaz Labs back in 2013-ish. And they had given me like 45 seconds to promote one of my courses. And then my wife and I were always trying to play this conservative balance of when is my civilian career going to be able to match my military career? And when can I say goodbye to this so I can bring this up? So for me, it was, I always played the conservative route because I had 2 kids. So I didn't want to do anything that was going to be jump off and just jump right into a business that wasn't going to be profitable. So after 45 seconds of promoting this product on a webinar, I had looked at my PayPal account. I showed it to my wife and she said, quit your job tomorrow. And I was like, I can't do that. So the whole time on the carpool on the way in with the guys that I carpooled in with, I was looking at how much leave I had and how could I balance this so that I could make, you know, still have 2 months of pay while still being able to try and figure out this whole internet business thing, because I never, like Ryan, I could never really figure out the print sales. I was never really comfortable with my own art, but I was really comfortable with the education side of things. So for me, it had to do with when is what I do as a hobby going to be able to surpass what I do for a living. And then once I realized that that was feasible, that was in about 2014, which is about 4 years after I had started my blog. So,
Michael, let me think about that. So I think up until I realized there was some path to success, I was doing some really not so fun behind the scenes video editing for some magazines. And I would work on these videos for like a week and get like $250 out of it. So enough for tacos, but that's about it. And
good tacos,
pretty good tacos though. And then at the time I was releasing a lot of passion projects online. I'd post them on social media and different websites and things like that. And that work started getting shared by bigger companies and bigger blogs like the Weather Channel and Nat Geo and stuff like that. And then I started getting email requests for commission projects, like, you know, going out and shooting some landscape photography or going out and shooting time lapse. And they were putting dollar signs to the projects that I had never even dreamt of before that I didn't even think was possible. And I was like, oh, this is like, this is actually, you know, this could be something. So I started taking some of those projects and started getting hired by agencies and different companies. And then I pretty much quit doing all the behind the scenes video editing work because that was just not viable at all. So at that point I started working solely on landscape photography and time lapse and video and
eating a lot more tacos,
way more tacos, and I could pay rent actually, you know, so it worked.
That's
out.
Good too. Yeah. Yeah. So you say you got a lot of that traction from social media. I think we have a question from the audience actually for social media. Let's go to that. And we're going to take some questions here from our people here at the Out of Oregon event.
Hey guys, my question is, how important is social media to your business? And based on the main ones, how would you rank them as far as like, this is the one I got to have, this is the one I can, you know, less important to the one that's, you know, I don't spend too much time on that.
So for me, YouTube was always the place that I got really started and going because I was sharing. Basically, my website had turned into me just kind of posting these fun photos of me going from place to place in California to people wanting education on how I was doing the things I was doing. So I started with YouTube. YouTube was an avenue for me to basically share my voice and share my thought process on processing photos through Photoshop and Photomatics and all the programs I was using at the time. And then I only use that out of necessity to be able to embed that onto my website. So I wasn't even thinking about gaining subscribers or views. I just needed an outlet in order to grab that video and put it onto my website. So that's how I started with YouTube. And then now as things have progressed, monetarily, you don't make a whole lot off of YouTube itself, unless you're like, I don't know, Kanye West or something like that, where you're getting like 5 billion views a day. So what you really have to do is you have to be creative in how you're getting your audience, no matter what social media channel that is, to get off of the social media platform. And for me, what I found to be most profitable is on the email list, because people are typically going to social media for free or fun, especially Instagram and Facebook. So that's where I'll post my photos because they're free and they're fun and people are scrolling, but they don't really want to be sold to on a social media platform, because that's not the time or place for them. So the idea is to basically get them onto the email list so that you could then find an avenue that is acceptable for them to buy. And that's pretty much how you use that. So you're not necessarily using the social media as a way that's like no integrity. Like, oh, the only reason why I'm here is because I want to get your email address. But that really is the sole way in which, as an educator, I make my profitability is off of the email side and has nothing to do with my social media side. So I use social media more as a way to share my story, share my life, and share the places that I've been to. And oh, as an aside, here's my business, as opposed to my business is on Facebook, because that doesn't really make it profitable.
Yeah, social media has grown in popularity. It becomes increasingly difficult to leverage social media for your business. And I think that if you get on a platform early when it's growing, you can have explosive growth. You can definitely get a lot of exposure. You win the social media lottery. And, you know, I've certainly known photographers who have done that. And, you know, we've seen some platforms come out of nowhere and just explode, like Google Plus, and then completely disappear. And, you know, personally, I invested a lot of time and resources on building up a Facebook profile. And then it was actually doing well. I was able to market successfully on Facebook using my business page. And then Facebook took the rug out from underneath me. They changed all the algorithms. They made business pages less important. So suddenly this huge following I built up on my business page became pretty much useless. But at no point in my career have I ever felt that social media was a better marketing tool than, as Blake just said, a direct to marketing approach. And so I've invested a lot of time and energy in building up my mailing list over the years. And ironically, you know, social media is great, I think, for a lot of photographers because it's free. You don't have to invest anything other than sweat equity into building it up. But it's becoming increasingly an uphill charge to try to make anything out of it. You know, I was late getting on Instagram, for example. Like everyone was doing Instagram years before me. And I got on Instagram, I don't know, maybe 6-9 months ago. And it's really, really hard for me to build up a profile on Instagram to translate some of my prior success on social media to Instagram because there's so many people on Instagram. And you're not just competing with the photographers, you're competing with every, you know, funny cat video that's out there. So there's a whole world of people competing for attention on social media. I feel that some of the more traditional forms of reaching people, like paid advertising, is probably a much better way of successfully marketing a photography business than trying to throw your hat into the ring with social media. You don't really have much control over who sees what you put up on social media. That's up to the social media companies. They're constantly changing their algorithms. So the more I do this professional photography business, the less I rely on social media, the less I even think about using social media, the more I think about using some of the more traditional methods of reaching the consumer directly.
You know, for me, I feel like what you've heard is the same story for me. I, like Ian, was late to the Instagram game.
I'm glad that you like me. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I do. I do like this guy, like all these guys.
Sorry.
No, you're good. You know, as far as print sales or anything in photography and making a profit, you'll find that it has very little, if anything, to do with the photography. You know, there's other dynamics here. You know, it's more about the marketing and business standpoint. There's phenomenal photographers all over the world, but I think those who succeed, really, it comes down to who can, you know, incorporate the business practices and the marketing side, because all photographers take great shots. One thing that, as far as social media is concerned, I find one of the crucial components to being successful in marketing artwork from a standpoint of either workshops or print sales is connecting with people. The difference I see with Facebook and Instagram is Facebook, for me, has allowed me to connect a little bit more personably with people, rather than Instagram is all about scrolling through pretty photos. I find engagement and dialogue can really create dynamic success within a workshop culture. So I have my workshop attendees post their photographs behind the scenes. Look how much fun we're having up in the Tetons and White Pocket. It's not even about the photographs that we take there. People just see that we have an incredible time and they want to go on a workshop. So then they sign up for the email list, which these gentlemen have talked about. And so next time I submit something for a workshop through the email list, social media along with the email list has been very successful for me. One thing I do at my art shows and in the galleries is when I make a sale, I take a photograph with the clients who purchased my artwork. Chris, you know, he said, hey, it's always great to see you, you know, succeed with standing by selling these big prints. Well, if you're selling a car and you don't put a sign in the window, you know, you don't know that that car is for sale. Only until you showcase on social media or to other people that you're actually selling your artwork, people don't know. You know, we assume as photographers, if we put up a photograph, we hope that people will know that we'll market that. I'm really overt in terms of how much I post about me selling and marketing my artwork. And constantly I get emails, hey, do you by chance sell prints of your work? And it's just kind of funny because I'm so overt and loud about it that even though people don't understand that I sell my work. And so consistency is important in that connection. And for me, Facebook is where I initiate those relationships, translated to, pointed directly to the email list as well.
Yeah, social media is kind of interesting for me, especially since I did kind of build some of what I'm doing, at least a decent amount of it through social media. As far as what social media is important now, I guess, I don't know, they all have their benefits, right? Like what I like about YouTube is, you can post a video and you can tell a story and just, have a discussion about why you took a photo and how you took a photo and really get in depth with it. And somebody's going to listen and watch and be engaged. Whereas with something like Instagram, they might look at the photo and scroll right past your description of it and not really pay attention to what you're actually doing. But then, as far as Instagram goes, when companies are looking to sponsor artists and do ambassadorship programs, they're looking to Instagram right now. The thing is, though, in a year or 2 years or 3 years, we don't know what's going to be popular in social media. There could be not some other social media platform that comes out that takes the place of all of these that are current. It's always changing. So with social media, I just tell somebody, don't put all your eggs into one basket. Grab a Facebook account, post some photos. Grab an Instagram account, post some photos if you have time, maybe start a YouTube channel. But I mean, all this stuff is going to change over time, and we don't know. In a year from now, is Instagram going to be usable? I'm not entirely sure. Like the discussion about Google Plus, I do remember when Google Plus was popular. I kind of started investing my time into that. And then, of course, it died out and no one looked at the photos anymore. And you felt like, oh, it's kind of wasted time.
Some people rode the wave when that first built up.
Yeah.
They got on early and it was like a balloon expanding. And suddenly they had 2 million Google Plus followers. And that translated all of a sudden into Facebook and Twitter followers. And, they rode the wave and they did quite well. And then the whole thing just, fell apart.
And like you with Facebook, it's like I grew this entire audience, and then Facebook said, "You know what? Unless you pay us a whole lot of money, right, we're not going to show anyone your work." So,
yeah. Well, what you said earlier was really insightful about how companies look at these numbers, whether they mean anything or not. If you don't have the numbers on the right platform, a lot of times sponsors might look the other way, and so you've got people who are actually like investing money to build up their numbers so that they can attract sponsors. Yeah. And it's kind of crazy.
That's like a different side of the industry, besides the education is like the ambassadorship and sponsorship type stuff with it, which is in a sense, a fairly new career path in photography. I mean, it's been around a little bit, but it's definitely an avenue that at least a lot of the photographers on Instagram seem to be taking. But I would say newsletter website is the most important thing. It's not social media, but it's a place where you have full control over your audience and what your audience sees and who sees it. It's not being controlled by a big company. You have this collected list of people who are passionate about what you're doing. And on your website, you have full control over not only the content that people are seeing, but the way in which they're seeing it. So, if you want to write about your artwork, you can do that. You can display it in any way, shape, or form you see fit. And it's this place where you can, share the work in the purest form, besides print, of course. But I do think, build a website, build a newsletter. Definitely, I've been trying to take people kind of away from some of my social accounts to the website where I'm actually writing more about my artwork and why I'm taking the photographs. But I do think, if you don't have to spend a ton of time on every social media platform, but maybe just have a presence on each of them so you don't, if one of them goes down, you're not going to feel upset when you spent all this time and it goes down, because I know a lot of us have.
You hear horror stories too, that for whatever reason, some platforms actually erase or delete profiles overnight. It's not whether algorithms change. I've seen somebody that posted, that they had X number of subscribers. It was their sole income base. And then Facebook received a report that maybe it was a fake profile, deleted it. It's gone for good. It's a good point.
Yeah. And if I can build on something you said earlier, Ryan, about making that personal connection with people, that's the most important thing. I mean, social media, even the mailing list numbers they're just numbers. They're meaningless unless you're actually making that deep connection with the people who are there. And that's always the biggest challenge I have, is just finding a better way to get the message to as many people as possible and having them interact with that message and to feel like they're a part of the story that you're trying to weave with your brand. And so I think that ultimately it really is about quality over quantity. You can have, I've known people with huge social media numbers, but they can't convert it into sales to save their life. So I think the trick is that whatever you do, social media, building a list, find a way to make that deep personal connection with the people on your list, build a quality connection, and it'll be far better than the quantity of numbers that people have.
Fabulous. All right, we have another question from the audience.
Yes. Speaking of websites, and thinking about the hobbyist who starts with perhaps one of the free website building kits and so forth, and then they start getting requests, friends and friends of friends and so forth, and you're starting to get your followers. And then you start looking at, how can I get a better website? What other features would I want on the website? How do I even try to protect with the copyrights and so forth? And the problems with that? You know, do you have any advice for the general hobbyist who is trying to take the first or second step in the website development to take it to the next level of not fully professional, but to have something that looks and functions better than, you know, what they built when they were in the seventh grade?
For me, I started that way. And actually I'm currently, you know, polishing up a new website that's taken a lot of time. What I've noticed about any website is really, it's up to you to direct traffic there. A website does not market itself, no matter how great it is. If you have a phenomenal website, unless you know how to market and guide people there, it's going to be a pretty website that you get to look at. And, you know, so it's not the most important thing in my mind. That's why I think I've kind of put it on the back burner a little bit, because I've got other priorities. But keep that in mind, as you suggest or say, as a hobbyist, you might not need, you know, a fancy or more professional website. And to be honest, some of the websites that are created by printers are phenomenal as far as revenue generating. They actually put your work in front of people. Whereas if you're not actively directing people to your website, you might get some sales as far as print sales, you know, through those different, you know, revenue generating websites. But I think as you get more serious, you know, and if you have that desire, go for it. There are some website builders who are exclusive to the photography community. I don't want to mention names just, you know, for the sake of tonight, but we could connect at another time. But there are very great platforms that are specific to either workshops or print sales or different dynamics. So I think it all boils down to define your goal. What is it that you want? Do you want print sales? Do you want to blog and tell your story? Do you want to have a workshop type website? So it's very different approach versus what your goal is. And, you know, I think what's interesting is photographers fall into the trap sometimes when it comes to print sales, that our stories of photographers is what sells a print, and it's not. They'll listen to the story and they'll connect with us and they're happy. And unless we really make them upset, you know, they might buy our art. People buy art for their reason and their attachment to our work. I've got a great, great shot of Canadian Rockies that I actually shot poorly. It was like 3200 ISO because I was shooting night skies before sunrise and forgot to change my camera over, and I haven't been back since to replicate it. It's not a great technical shot, but it's composed well, beautiful colors. People buy it all day long, and I hear it's because they got married there. They stayed there for the honeymoon. We used to go here for travel. If I start telling that family my story about that, you know, they don't care. But if I start connecting with them as far as why they're connected to that piece, they're more likely to purchase that piece. And in their living room, it's a conversation piece, not of my story of that location, but of their story. They're going to tell neighbors, friends, oh, we would go up there as family, this and that. Not, yeah, this photographer went there and, you know, he hiked, you know, to the top. No, they don't care. So when you're considering building a website, that's also crucial to know that it's not all about your stories, but it could be about their stories and why they connect. So make a very friendly, non-arrogant website, you know, to connect with people. Again, it comes down, for me, in my opinion, connection with people.
Blake, what did you want to say?
I'm a control freak. So I had to have the most control possible. So I went with, you know, a traditional WordPress website, built it all myself so that I wouldn't have any other company that would own that property, so that I knew that I had my space on the internet. And really, it becomes your own office for very cheap. So if you're talking about, you know, WordPress hosting plus a WordPress website, a .com is going to cost you $12.99. I think everyone in this room and everyone who's watching this should have yourname.com or some variation of that. Because at one point, that might become your next mailbox that we have on the street. Because to me, my email is more important than what hits that box that used to have all the important stuff in it. So I think everyone should own theirname.com. Cost you 12, 13 bucks a year. Not that big of a deal. The hosting of that, if you do want to create a website at some point, you're basically just creating an insurance policy for yourself. That hosting might cost you $100, maybe $200 a year. You divide that out, that's like maybe, I don't know, crazy math here, $20 a month. That's it. For your own personal office space that you can send people to, what street could you do that on? You can even have your own gallery there with possible print sales, and it's not really costing you much of anything at all. So I wanted to have the most control over that. So I went with a WordPress website so nobody else could take that away from me, and I own it at that point. Now, you do have to get a little bit technical with that, because you have to know a little bit about, you know, themes and how you're going to set it up. But once you get it set up, it's pretty much done. And then you just polish it and refine it as you go. And that seemed to me to be the best avenue to share my story, my pictures, and my videos, so that I could get that out there without having any limitations on me. The problem with having no limitations is the limitation of learning it all. So now add that on top of all the other stuff that you do. So I understand that that can be an issue, but when you do that, when you go WordPress, get your own hosting, nobody can take it away from you. I've seen people's social media profiles get taken away. I've seen people that are on multi-level marketing platforms and they think they own a business because they're on a multi-level marketing platform. And then guess what? That multi-level marketing program goes under. Now they have no business. The same thing happens with Facebook and stuff. So I think that's a really important thing. If you get nothing else from this, that ownyourname.com or some variation of that. And I own probably 190.coms. So, and they're all variations of either my name or F64 Academy or Academy F64 or Group F64, you name it, I own it. And that's just because I want to protect my brand. But you don't have to go that crazy. Just get yourname.com or some variation of it so that you have some platform that you can protect yourself in the event that your social media platform goes under.
I just thought it was interesting how you said, you know, get yourname.com. Early on, I decided not to go with ianplant.com. Instead, I went with ipphotography.com, which in retrospect was a really big mistake. It sounded pretty silly to most people. And so I switched over to ianplant.com. So definitely go with your own name. Don't go with initials, especially if the initials are IP. So, but speaking of IP, intellectual property, that is, one thing I wanted to focus on was you asked the question, the three words you used were protect your copyright. And this is an interesting question that comes up a lot. You know, people are always asking me, like, how do you protect your copyrights? And they're shocked by my answer, which is, I don't. I don't even bother with it. I don't even think about it. You know, so much of what we do as professional photographers these days is we try to get our work in front of as many eyeballs as possible. And the internet is the conduit for that. And of course, once you set something afloat on the internet, set sail on the internet, you never know where it's going to end up. And inevitably, if it's of any interest to anyone, it's going to be stolen by someone somewhere. And I've certainly had this happen to me a few times. And, you know, trying to enforce your intellectual property rights can be difficult, time-consuming, very frustrating, counterproductive to your overall strategy of getting people to pay attention to what you're doing. And an utter and total waste of time. So, you know, a few anecdotes I've got about that. I remember once a friend of mine, professional photographer, called me up and said, hey, some company in Portugal, they're the Best Buy of Portugal. They've been using my photo and one of your photos to advertise their, I don't know, big screen TVs or something like that. And so he told me that he had organized a Facebook campaign. He spent a weekend getting all of his Facebook followers to send messages to this company to harass them. And they eventually took his photo down. And I said to him, I'm like, well, did you make any money off of this? He's like, no. And I'm like, well, then it was just a complete and total waste of your time. Like, you didn't really achieve anything positive out of this. And I remember once I was down in Patagonia back when I was still leading photo tours, and I was in this little cafe at the border between Argentina and Chile, and shopping, you know, my clients and I, we stopped there to, when we were crossing the border, to get some coffee. And I was looking at their selection of magnets, and I was looking at this one photo that they had on the magnet. I said, hey, that looks a lot like one of the photos I took here a few years back. I think someone, you know, must've copied my composition. Then I'm looking at it more closely. I'm like, no, wait a minute. That is my shot. That is exactly the shot that I took. Some company that was making magnets in Chile had stolen one of my photos, and there it was selling in the cafe. I couldn't even figure out who was making the magnet. Like, if I wanted to try to enforce my intellectual property rights, it would have been an impossible task of finding out who it was that stole it and then figuring out a way to sue them in Chilean court. So the internet is just an awful, awful place if you want to actually protect your intellectual property rights. So I don't even think about it. I know of some photographers who have actually tried to aggressively enforce their copyrights, and sometimes they'll hire like a company that specializes in going and policing that. But every single photographer I've ever talked to who has really made an effort to do that has told me the same story, that they were absolutely miserable, that they found the process to be just, I don't know, they just felt like it put a hole in their soul because they were harassing a bunch of people who were just sharing their photos on Instagram and Facebook and things like that. And they might make some money out of it, but it was a lot of time and effort. And they felt like it really wasn't a productive use of their time. So I do get that question a lot about protecting copyrights, and I tell people the same thing. You know, you do whatever you want to do, but if you're holding yourself back, if you're not putting photos on your website, if you're worried about that sort of thing, it's really going to interfere in your enjoyment of photography, and it's going to interfere in your mission of trying to actually get word out about your photography. I don't know if anyone here has had a different experience with that, but
actually, I agree with you on most points. If you're spending a ton of time worrying about the copyright, it's like, just don't post any work, you know, because it's like your work, if it gets enough, you know, if it gets viewed on enough platforms, it's going to get stolen. And chances are you're probably not going to know about it. There's a few resources you can use. PhotoClaim is a great company. They work in Europe. And I met the owner of PhotoClaim at another conference, and he allowed me to be a part of the platform. And I was pretty skeptical on it. They just use reverse image search, and then they send you some contract. They send you some different links of people who have may have stolen your work. And you can say, hey, this was really illegal. I'm not cool with that. Or, hey, just ignore that. It's not a big deal. It's just somebody posting on social media or something like that, or a blog. And they've actually earned me a bit of money per month. I literally click a checkbox every so often. Yeah. So in that case, it's very minimal effort.
Yeah.
I don't have to spend much time thinking about it. If I had to spend any more time thinking about copyright, I would be very upset with it, which is kind of what we were talking about. Yeah. Like, if you have a friend who's a lawyer who's willing to take care of some bigger cases for you, like if Samsung steals your photo, and I don't know why I said if a company happens to steal your photo for something, and it's a big company and it's not okay, and you have the resources to go after them, sure, have your people, you know, send them a cease and desist. But if you have to spend any more effort and time and money on that, it's just not worth it. You should invest that time into creating your art and creating your business, because it's just not going to be worth it. But yeah, if you have some automated resources, I would say it's good to do that. But other than that, I'm in agreement where it's just not worth the time invested.
Yeah, we did have one of our photographers at one of our other conferences, and he's like, "I have a company that works for me, and they're lawyers, and they do very well, and it's about 60% of my income comes from those." So I'm like, geez, and he really fights for it. So in that case, yeah, I guess so. Yeah. So kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Other questions from the audience?
First question for those that are doing the ebooks: what products do you use? Do you find the most, what's the word I'm hunting for?
Which desktop publishing
product do you use? And then how do you go about putting that up for sale through Amazon or otherwise?
Well, I'm using a program that most folks don't use anymore called CorelDRAW. Some laughter.
Serious?
Right. Yeah, it's an old program. And, you know, of course, it's not even available on Mac. So I'm running Parallels on my Mac computer so I can still use Corel. I've been using it. As I said, I used to be a self-publisher. I used to do physical print publishing. And I've been using CorelDRAW for 15 years. I got out of print publishing because, you know, no one buys books anymore. And so I've been doing PDF ebooks for many, many years. And I sell them entirely through my own website. I've never ever tried to get something on Amazon, because they're part of the reason why I don't want to try to publish on Amazon is that there are certain requirements for something to be available on Amazon that, with my ebooks, it's important to have the text and the photos go together. And one thing is that with, anything that's, published on Amazon and their e-reader services, you have to have it so that the text can change in size. So the text might not flow the right way. It might end up on the wrong page when you're trying to describe an image. So I've never even bothered to look into that to try to do it that way. So all of my ebooks have been completely self-hosted, self-sold, self-marketed.
I used Amazon.
Yeah.
When I was first starting, I was really grabbing at straws to do anything to get out of my full-time job. So I was, you know, I looked at any way to monetize my education. And one of those ways was I wrote ebooks and I did it through Amazon. And I didn't really find the sales to be very profitable. So I wrote 3 ebooks in 2014. I just hammered them all out that I wanted to get done. Did it all with Microsoft Word, and I ported those over to Amazon. And it was all right. It doesn't really carry any residual. It is nice because you can say, hey, I've got this ebook and it's on Amazon. And people are like, oh, you have an ebook on Amazon. And that seems to be some type of measure of success, I guess. but it really isn't, you know, as far as the success that I've made. I learned very early in my career that ebooks weren't very profitable for me. So I stopped doing them altogether and just turned everything into an e-course through my own website, building videos and products that way that had PDFs included in those e-courses that then could increase the price margin of the product. So I didn't really find too much success in ebooks. Now I actually kind of give them away. If someone says, hey, do you have a book on photography? I'm like, yeah, I wrote a 241-page ebook on, you know, beginning photography. I'll just send you the PDF, you know? So that ends up being kind of how I treat my ebooks these days. And I know that it is a very lucrative market for some individuals, but I tend to just keep everything in the e-course category of things rather than the ebook side of things.
Yeah, ebooks, I think, were a lot more profitable about 5 years ago, but now a lot of folks are doing them. And, you know, having an ebook on Amazon, you probably won't sell anything on Amazon because, like with anything, you have to find a way to market it. Amazon isn't going to market it for you because they've got millions of books. And the only way that Amazon's going to take notice of you is if you make a lot of sales. So, you know, my philosophy has always been cut out the middleman. If I'm going to make a lot of sales, through my marketing efforts, I might as well keep all the profits for it. So,
and that's true, very true, because of the way that Amazon they've done something very creative in how they've marketed the niche of ebooks to make ebooks not profitable because they're trying to make it accessible to all individuals. So you make a certain amount of profit at a certain price margin. If you don't match that price margin, you don't make that profit. So that's the way they've been able to keep ebooks under $9.99, which now we have a devaluation of education. It's good because it's accessible to many, but it's not good in the fact that you're sharing a lot of your life experiences for $7.99.
I think the key thread through everything we've been talking about tonight is you can't rely on Amazon or social media to make a name for yourself. You've got to find a way to make a direct connection with your customers and make it a deep quality connection as well.
Absolutely.
I see you're working on a Mac. Is that right? Oh, I was going to say, I think the easiest way is like iBooks Author.
Yeah.
If you're trying to create a PDF. Yeah. If you have a Mac. But if you're going to Amazon, I believe you could even just do it in Word. You kind of lose all of, you know, it's a lot of just text and there's an image in there somewhere. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the way that Amazon has it, you kind of have to be restricted to a Microsoft Word style image or PDF, which then becomes very linear, which in our world, we need things to be pretty. So now when I make a PDF that's going to be an ebook that I do on my own, I do it in PowerPoint just because I have the ability to move boxes and get the text exactly where I want it. So when I PDF it, it's freeze framed. And that's very similar to what you're talking about with your eye products.
Yeah, no, exactly. It is the same. Yeah. Yeah. I see photographers being a lot more successful with ebooks nowadays, doing very short ones that they give away for free to get them on your email
list. As a lead generator. Yeah, yeah, definitely. And of course, you know, ebooks at this point are so last week. Everything's video now. Blake is lucky. He's got a face for video. I have a face for ebooks. So I'm kind of stuck doing those.
You need to stop doing that to yourself.
Any other questions out here?
I am too a CorelDRAW veteran.
All right. Fantastic.
Anyway, this question kind of been answered a little bit here and there, but I was curious what kind of challenges, when you started out, you had a main revenue stream and that probably evolved or somehow changed over the course to when you started till now. How did you adapt and what did you do to overcome the changes that were in tech? That's for anybody that wants to answer.
Yeah, so I mentioned before, I kind of got started more in the commercial and licensing side. And then I started realizing I had a passion for teaching too. So I got into the education side, like tutorials and workshops and conferences and speaking engagements. And I realized, at least for what I'm doing, especially when I started doing a lot of time-lapse projects, which was kind of niche. It's kind of like a niche market. And I sort of thought to myself, I don't think this is going to last, like just doing time-lapse as a commercial career. So I decided to, you know, take what I was doing and push it into different avenues like education and print sales and a little bit of ambassadorship. And so I know that if something starts going downhill a little bit, I have all these other avenues to rely on that I can focus on more. And so that's what I've found the most helpful, is just not relying on one thing. Like I have education, I have commercial, I have licensing, I have all these different things that add up my income and how I generate money as a photographer and filmmaker.
For me, I read a book at one point that applies to anything, and it's called Strengths Finder. And you know, as we go through life, sometimes we're always taught work on your weaknesses to bring them as strengths. Strengths Finders is actually the opposite take, is focus on your strengths and make them stronger. And we were having this conversation earlier that just because we might do all these things, or other photographers are doing YouTube and ebooks and things like that, don't just do them for the sake of thinking that you need to do them. If you want to be a professional photographer, do what your strengths are and make those strengths even stronger. We only have so much time and you cannot do it all. And, you know, I find that the greatest challenge, the hurdle that we have to overcome, is balancing our time. And for me, you know, I only work in the areas that bring me excitement and motivation. And for me personally, it's not ebooks. That's why I don't do them. I'm sure that they would be very valuable for me to do them, but I'm only focused on the things that really bring me enjoyment. And if we don't enjoy this, then what are we doing really? And, you know, you have to decide what your goal is, focus on what's important to you, you can't do it all. You know, I think, I can't remember if it was Oprah Winfrey that she said, you can have it all in life. You just can't have it all at once, you know, and that's very true in photography and a lot of things. Don't try to do too much. Focus on your strengths. That way you're not paralyzed out of the inability to move forward, you know? So that's my advice on that topic.
Yeah. Just two quick observations. I mean, this industry is constantly in flux. Social media platforms rise and fall. Technology is constantly changing. I mean, certainly there was a seismic shift when film died and digital came out, and also with the rise of the internet. And I think it's a good idea to constantly be diversifying your business and also to be kind of like Madonna, you know, reinventing yourself every few years to keep up with the times. But to me, the biggest challenge is, you know, making money as a professional photographer is certainly a challenging thing. But the biggest challenge is making money doing what you want to do. And, you know, a good example of this was the most money I was ever making during my 15-year career was when I was running photo tours. And they were very successful, running tours all around the world. The money was coming in very well. But I wasn't happy doing it because I wasn't getting a chance to do my own photography. I was constantly with clients, and they were wonderful people, and we were going to some great places. But I was going back to the same places a lot over and over again. And when you've got clients, you're not really free to do your own photography. And I finally said to myself, I'm not in this to make money. If I wanted to make money, I could have, you know, stayed being a lawyer, which was my previous job. You know, I'm in this for the photography. So I decided to step away from the photo tour business, and my revenue took a huge hit as a result. But it was the right choice for me because it gave me more time to explore my own personal vision and to explore other business projects that I was more passionate about. So I feel like I am constantly reinventing myself, but the goal is to reinvent myself each time in a way that allows me more creative freedom and more of a chance to pursue what I really love.
Now we know we have a lawyer in the room. I'm a little scared.
Ex-lawyer. Yeah. Ex-lawyer.
That just changed everything.
All right. You know what? You guys have talked about all these things that you've put together, all the things you've worked on. Where can people see the work that you've done? Where can people follow you? So Ian Plant, where can we find you?
You can find me not on ipphotography.com, but ianplant.com. And also you can check out my new photo brand, shuttermonkeys.com. It's a really fun website that brings together a lot of great free resources for people. We're doing awesome videos in exotic locations all around the world. There's some great articles with photo tips and all sorts of location reviews and a lot of other wonderful resources. So shuttermonkeys.com.
Yeah, well, I tried to have people ask you in the beginning, right? What's your favorite type of monkey, Ian? And what did you tell people?
Orangutan.
What were you supposed to tell people?
Shutter monkeys. I know an orangutan's not even a monkey, but I don't discriminate. Just because you don't have a tail doesn't mean you're not a monkey. So
maybe it does. Ryan, where can we find you?
So part of sales is knowing your audience. And I think this is probably for photographers. They're probably not going to buy print. So I always defer to captureicons.com for photography workshops. I take workshop groups to White Pocket, all over the Southwest, Tetons, Kauai, and happy to have you there. But if you do want to buy a print, I won't be opposed. My prints are at Ryan Smith Fine Art Photo. Yeah, ryansmith.com didn't quite pull up.
chrissmith.com didn't work either.
Yeah, it's just kind of like John Doe, so I had to add the fineart.com. So ryansmithfineart.com to see my work.
f64academy.com, that's where I do YouTube tutorials, and that's about it these days. I used to do a lot of blogging on there, but I doubled down on my strengths, and I just do a lot of Photoshop tutorials on f64 Academy.
In pajamas?
I have a proper t-shirt on. I learned proper from Gavin Hardcastle.
We've learned a lot from Gavin Hardcastle.
Very proper.
ShaneBloomPhoto.com. I've got tutorials and cool stories and photos, and it's pretty fun.
All right. I thought he was doing some exercise in there too.
Very good. Thank you guys for coming to this late night edition. Tomorrow we'll be back. It'll be day 4, and we'll be doing Becoming a YouTube Landscape Photography Diva. That is with Mark Denny, Gavin Hardcastle, Blake Rudis, and Nick Page. So would you please give all of our panelists a big hand? Thank you very much.
F8, the Photographer's Perspective, is hosted by me, Chris Smith, and produced by Out of Chicago. A special thanks to all photographers that share their inside knowledge to make this possible. We release a new episode each week, so be sure to subscribe to the show wherever podcasts are found. To learn more about Out of Chicago and upcoming events, go to outofchicago.com. Subscribe to our mailing list to stay connected and be the first to know of our next new location where you can shoot side-by-side with the pros.